Counterparts, read by Jim Norton. The bell rang furiously, and when Miss Parker went to the tube, a furious voice called out in a piercing North of Ireland accent,
"Send Farrington here!"
Miss Parker returned to her machine, saying to a man who was writing at a desk, "Mr. Elaine wants you upstairs." The man muttered, "Blast him," under his breath, and pushed back his chair to stand up. When he stood up, he was tall and of great bulk. He had a hanging face, dark wine-coloured, with fair eyebrows and moustache. His eyes bulged forward slightly, and the whites of them were dirty. He lifted up the counter, and passing by the clients, went out of the office with a heavy step. He went heavily upstairs until he came to the second landing, where a door bore a brass plate with the inscription, "Mr. Elaine." Here he halted, puffing with labour and vexation, and knocked. The shrill voice cried,
"Come in!"
The man entered Mr. Elaine's room. Simultaneously, Mr. Elaine, a little man wearing gold-rimmed glasses on a clean-shaven face, shot his head up over a pile of documents. The head itself was so pink and hairless that it seemed like a large egg reposing on the papers. Mr. Elaine did not lose a moment.
"Farrington, what is the meaning of this? Why have I always to complain to you? May I ask you why you haven't made a copy of that contract between Bodley and Kirwan? I told you it must be ready by 4 o'clock.
But Mr. Shelley said, sir..."
"Mr. Shelley said, sir. Kindly attend to what I say and not to what Mr. Shelley says, sir. You have always some excuse or another for shirking work. Let me tell you that if the contract is not copied before this evening, I lay the matter before Mr. Crosby. Do you hear me now?"
"Yes, sir."
"Do you hear me now? And another little matter. I might as well be talking to the wall as talking to you. Understand once for all that you get half an hour for your lunch and not an hour and a half. How many courses do you want, I'd like to know? Do you mind me now?"
"Yes, sir."
Mr. Elaine bent his head again upon his pile of papers. The man stared fixedly at the polished skull which directed the affairs of Crosby and Elaine, gauging its fragility. A spasm of rage gripped his throat for a few moments, and then passed, leaving after it a sharp sensation of thirst. The man recognized the sensation and felt that he must have a good night's drinking. The middle of the month was past, and if he could get the copy done in time, Mr. Elaine might give him an order on the cashier. He stood still, gazing fixedly at the head upon the pile of papers. Suddenly, Mr. Elaine began to upset all the papers, searching for something. Then, as if he had been unaware of the man's presence till that moment, he shot up his head again, saying,
"Hey, are you going to stand there all day? Upon my word, Farrington, you take things easy."
"I was waiting to see."
"Very good, you needn't wait to see. Go downstairs and do your work."
The man walked heavily towards the door, and as he went out of the room, he heard Mr. Elaine cry after him that if the contract was not copied by evening, Mr. Crosby would hear of the matter. He returned to his desk in the lower office and counted the sheets which remained to be copied. He took up his pen and dipped it in the ink, but he continued to stare stupidly at the last words he had written. "In no case shall the said Bernard Bodley be..." The evening was falling, and in a few minutes they would be lighting the gas. Then he could write. He felt that he must slake the thirst in his throat. He stood up from the desk and, lifting the counter as before, passed out of the office. As he was passing out, the chief clerk looked at him inquiringly.
"It's all right, Mr. Shelley," said the man,
pointing with his finger to indicate the object of his journey. The chief clerk glanced at the hat rack, but seeing the row complete, offered no remark. As soon as he was on the landing, the man pulled a shepherd's plaid cap out of his pocket, put it on his head, and ran quickly down the rickety stairs. From the street door, he walked on furtively on the inner side of the path towards the corner and all at once dived into a doorway. He was now safe in the dark snug of O'Neill's shop, and filling up the little window that looked into the bar with his inflamed face, the colour of dark wine or dark meat, he called out,
"Here, Pat, give us the GP look a good fella."
The curate brought him a glass of plain porter. The man drank it at a gulp and asked for a caraway seed. He put his penny on the counter and, leaving the curate to grope for it in the gloom, retreated out of the snug as furtively as he had entered it. Darkness, accompanied by a thick fog, was gaining upon the dusk of February, and the lamps of Eustace Street had been lit. The man went up by the houses until he reached the door of the office, wondering whether he could finish his copy in time. On the stairs, a moist, pungent odour of perfumes saluted his nose. Evidently, Miss Delacour had come while he was out in O'Neill's. He crammed his cap back again into his pocket and re-entered the office, assuming an air of absent-mindedness.
"Mr. Alane has been calling for you," said the chief clerk severely. "Where were you?"
The man glanced at the two clients who were standing at the counter, as if to intimate that their presence prevented him from answering. As the clients were both male, the chief clerk allowed himself a laugh.
"I know that game," he said. "Five times a day is a little bit. Well, you better look sharp and get a copy of our correspondence in the Delacour case for Mr. Alane."
This address, in the presence of the public, his run upstairs and the porter he had gulped down so hastily, confused the man. And as he sat down at his desk to get what was required, he realized how hopeless was the task of finishing his copy of the contract before 5:30. The dark, damp night was coming, and he longed to spend it in the bars, drinking with his friends amid the glare of gas and the clatter of glasses. He got out the Delacour correspondence and passed out of the office. He hoped Mr. Alane would not discover that the last two letters were missing. The moist, pungent perfume lay all the way up to Mr. Alane's room. Miss Delacour was a middle-aged woman of Jewish appearance. Mr. Alane was said to be sweet on her, or on her money. She came to the office often and stayed a long time when she came. She was sitting beside his desk now, in an aroma of perfumes, smoothing the handle of her umbrella, and nodding the great black feather in her hat. Mr. Alane had swiveled his chair round to face her and thrown his right foot jauntily upon his left knee. The man put the correspondence on the desk and bowed respectfully, but neither Mr. Alane nor Miss Delacour took any notice of his bow. Mr. Alane tapped a finger on the correspondence and then flicked it towards him as if to say,
"That's all right, you can go."
The man returned to the lower office and sat down again at his desk. He stared intently at the incomplete phrase, "In no case shall the said Bernard Bodley be," and thought how strange it was that the last three words began with the same letter. The chief clerk began to hurry Miss Parker, saying she would never have the letters typed in time for post. The man listened to the clicking of the machine for a few minutes and then set to work to finish his copy. But his head was not clear and his mind wandered away to the glare and rattle of the public house. It was a night for hot punches. He struggled on with his copy, but when the clock struck 5, he had still 14 pages to write. Blast it, he couldn't finish it in time. He longed to execrate aloud, to bring his fist down on something violently. He was so enraged that he wrote Bernard Bernard instead of Bernard Bodley, and had to begin again on a clean sheet. He felt strong enough to clear out the whole office single-handed. His body ached to do something, to rush out and revel in violence. All the indignities of his life enraged him. Could he ask the cashier privately for an advance? No, the cashier was no good, no damn good. He wouldn't give an advance. He knew where he would meet the boys, Leonard and O'Halloran and Nosey Flynn. The barometer of his emotional nature was set for a spell of riot. His imagination had so abstracted him that his name was called twice before he answered. Mr. Alane and Miss Delacour were standing outside the counter, and all the clerks had turned round in anticipation of something. The man got up from his desk. Mr. Alane began a tirade of abuse, saying that two letters were missing. The man answered that he knew nothing about them, that he had made a faithful copy. The tirade continued. It was so bitter and violent that the man could hardly restrain his fist from descending upon the head of the mannequin before him.
"I know nothing about any other two letters," he said stupidly.
"You know nothing. Of course you know nothing," said Mr. Alane. "Tell me," he added, glancing first for approval to the lady beside him, "do you take me for a fool? Do you think me an utter fool?"
The man glanced from the lady's face to the little egg-shaped head and back again, and almost before he was aware of it, his tongue had found a felicitous moment.
"I don't think, sir," he said, "that that's a fair question to put to me."
There was a pause in the very breathing of the clerks. Everyone was astounded, the author of the witticism no less than his neighbours, and Miss Delacour, who was a stout, amiable person, began to smile broadly. Mr. Alane flushed to the hue of a wild rose, and his mouth twitched with a dwarf's passion. He shook his fist in the man's face till it seemed to vibrate like the knob of some electric machine.
"You impertinent ruffian! You impertinent ruffian! I'll make short work of you, wait till you see. You'll apologize to me for your impertinence, or you'll quit the office instanter. You'll quit this, I'm telling you, or you'll apologize to me!"